You are listening to Love and War with David Harwood. Our goal is to offer spiritual insights that will enhance your relationship with God, yourself, and others. Should you be edified by what you hear, please recommend Love and War to people you love. Let's begin. Over the last month, I have been looking into what the Bible teaches concerning wisdom. I'm asking God for wisdom, and I believe that it's the purpose of God to give me wisdom. And since I've been studying it, I thought that I would share it with you because I have found it to be fascinating. Beginning with the question, how important is wisdom? What I've discovered is that wise people tend to think it's important. Maybe we should listen to them. In Proverbs chapter 4, verse 7, the sage wrote, "The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom, and with all your acquiring, get understanding." Well, that almost seems like a riddle. The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom. What I've discovered is that when you know that you don't know exactly as you ought to know, or that your wisdom, your understanding can be increased, and that the understanding is available, that God can give you wisdom, that you can receive wisdom from counsel, from friends, from mentors, that the scriptures themselves are well able to give us practical understanding. When you understand that you can increase in wisdom and that you need wisdom, it's the beginning of getting it. When you realize that you are not as wise as you could be, when you realize that there is wisdom available, and then you decide to do something about it, that's the beginning of wisdom. The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom. Well, listen to me. Jesus himself was wise. It's written, as far as a description of his youth, that he increased in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. He increased in wisdom. He went from one level of wisdom to another. I know that this is speaking of Jesus as a youth. I still think that if he can grow in wisdom, if he grew in wisdom, well, we can also. And ultimately, Jesus became really wise. He taught like a sage, and he intends, it's his intention, to develop other wise people. In Matthew 23, verse 34, the Lord said, "I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes." Prophets, sages, and scribes. This is almost like an overlooked apostolic function. I'm sending you sages. I'm sending you wise people. Of course, we tend to think of a wise person as being a wise man, but you know, in the Bible, it speaks of wise women, and also in the scriptures, wisdom is personified as a woman. The primary example of a sage apostle was Jesus' half-brother Jacob. We call him James. It's really Jacob. I don't know why his name, Jacobus, is changed to James. It certainly sounds like Yaakov or Jacob. Well, we're going to call him James. The primary example of the sage apostle was Jesus' half-brother, James. And in appreciating this aspect of apostolic ministry, let's begin to understand wisdom. Wait, hold on. Why is it that you're saying that James was an apostle? Because Paul called him an apostle. Paul called him an apostle when he was speaking of the Messiah after his resurrection, revealing himself to disciples. At one point in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul said, "Then he revealed himself to James and then the rest of the apostles." James was looked upon as being extremely, extremely wise. James was wise, and he was recognized as wise in the early church. We ought to consider also that James was the primary example of a sage apostle. He didn't go out and do ministry. He didn't plant any works. We don't see him involved in evangelism. He was just a man who was present within the framework of the church, famous for his piety, famous for his prayer life, his devotion, loving God, loving the Father through his Messiah, his half-brother, Jesus, whom he received as being God incarnate. He called himself the slave of Jesus. Listen, James was awesome. James was wise. James really humbled himself and became a primary disciple of the Messiah, Jesus. And when James spoke, everybody listened. So, what is wisdom? Let's begin to take a look at wisdom. We'll also look at the apostolic ministry that has to do with being a wise person. Listen, isn't it an amazing thing that part of apostolic ministry may be to cause the church to grow in wisdom? Well, I think it is. I think that it's an amazing thing that the Lord would set people within the framework of the believing community to cause the believers to become wise. Before wisdom is mentioned in the Bible, it is presupposed, it is already understood that the Creator is wise and that his wisdom is manifest in creation. In Proverbs 3, verse 19, it says, "The Lord, the Eternal One, by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding he established the heavens." In Isaiah chapter 6, verse 3, it speaks of these angels that are burning with revelation, crying out to one another, saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. Holy, holy, holy is heaven's warlord." The whole earth is a manifestation of his glory. That's really what's being said there in the Hebrew. The earth is the fullness of his glory. Awesome. Part of the glory of God is the manifestation of this wisdom. Part of God's goodness is that he's wise. And humanity was created in the image of God with the capacity to both have and to express insight. In Genesis 2, it is written that God warned humanity, saying, "From any tree of the garden you may eat freely, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, good and bad, you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die." And then it's later on in the chapter, it says, "It is not good for a man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." And out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the sky and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called a living creature, that was its name. The man gave names to all the cattle and to the birds of the sky and to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helper suitable for him. Remember, Adam was created in the image of God with the capacity to both have and to express insight. And this was seen in the insight that he had into the very character of the creation, naming them and revealing their identities. Well, shortly after this comes the conflict of wisdoms. And we begin in chapter 3 in Genesis, starting in verse 1, where it says, "The serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, 'Indeed, as God said, you shall not eat from any tree of the garden.' The woman said to the serpent, 'From the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but from the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat from it or touch it, or you will die.' And the serpent said to the woman, 'You surely will not die, for God knows that in the day you eat from it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil, good and bad.' And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate, and gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. And then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loin coverings." Here in the beginning of chapter 3, it's written that the serpent was more crafty than any other creature that God had made. Now, the word here is arum, and it means shrewd. It means prudent. When it's used in a negative sense, it can be crafty. The adversary is crafty. The adversary is shrewd. In both the Hebrew scriptures translated into the Greek and in the New Testament Greek, this word is used positively and negatively. It is the goal and the motive that makes this type of wisdom good or bad. In fact, Jesus said that he was sending people out into the world defenseless, but what he wanted them to be was as shrewd as serpents. And this is the same word. It's being used positively. Now, Eve was aware of the prohibition and the warning, but she did not evaluate her circumstances according to the word she heard. Instead, she evaluated according to what she saw, knowing good and evil. Now, that is enticing. Well, it's not just talking strictly about moral good and evil. This is really a success oriented, and understanding and evaluating the potential for good and calamity. God says, I am the Lord. I create light and darkness. I create good and I create calamity. It's that type of word. This fruit that she desired was in order to make her wise. The Hebrew here is sechal. And again, this is a word that has to do with insight or prudence. It's a practical wisdom word. It means sensible. Sometimes in our versions, in our English versions, this word is translated prosperous or success. That's what Eve was after. She was after independently evaluating her circumstances and choices quite apart from the input of the Creator. She herself would say, this is good for me. This is bad for me. I will make a goal. I shall establish a plan. I shall get there independently of the Creator. Remember how in Isaiah chapter 30, maybe you don't know this verse, but it really struck my heart many years ago where God says, woe to those people who are executing a plan, but the plan has not come from me. People are trying to establish relationships with that which they believe will help them, will preserve them, will give them success, but they didn't go to God first. In fact, in James it says, listen, if you're planning on going and doing something, you think that you've got a good goal, you think that you've got a good plan, shouldn't you go to God and say, Lord, is it your will? Shouldn't you be saying, I will be doing this if God is willing? So at any rate, this is the introduction to wisdom in the Scriptures. And as in the rest of the revelatory word, we see a manifestation of warfare in the present cosmos. In this case, it's the introduction of wisdom that is opposed to the Creator's wisdom. This is wisdom that is from below. There are two types of wisdom. There is wisdom that ascends from beneath and is constantly trying to rise up only ultimately to fall. And there is wisdom from above. There is descending wisdom that gets lower and lower and is ultimately exalted. And these two wisdoms are described by the sage apostle. In James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18, he wrote, who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy, and the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Now the context of this epistle is that there is contention in the community. People want to have position. They want to be recognized as teachers. What are they after? Are they after status? Are they after money? Perhaps they have a self-righteous outlook in regards to their own emphases, and they want everybody to share their outlook. And so they're striving. They're striving for position. They're striving for respect. Now, within the framework of ancient Greek rhetoric, there are three things that are mentioned: ethos, logos, and pathos. Ethos has to do with the ethic of the person speaking. Is the person worth listening to? And then there's an appeal to reason, and then there's an appeal to emotion in order to bring about a convincing argument. Well, in this case, a person who is presenting themselves as being wise is to be evaluated by this. They are to show their deeds by their good behavior in the gentleness of wisdom. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. Now, it takes wisdom to discern the genuine. And one of the things that we can discern when we are looking for genuine wisdom is it being expressed gently? Is there a gentleness in the way in which the wisdom is being presented? Is the wisdom that this person claims to have being manifest in the way in which they treat other people? Are they gentle people? Wisdom is gentle. But what is in the heart of the wisdom from beneath? Bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. It's an amazing thing that the wisdom from below is motivated by bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. James wrote, "But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth." Well, what does that mean? Nobody likes to think of themselves as operating out of a motivation of bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I think that today I'm going to be bitter and jealous and selfishly ambitious, and I'm going to come up with a plan to advance myself. No, people don't like to see themselves like that. And so what happens is they suppress the truth. They suppress the truth. They rationalize their thoughts. They rename their motivation. Their real motives are suppressed. Oftentimes, they don't even remember why they came up with the goal or what type of plan or the motivation for the types of plans that they have to reach that goal. No, they rationalize it. They rename it. The motives are suppressed. And this is called arrogance. It says, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. Well, why would it be arrogant? Well, God sees the truth. You can suppress it. You can rationalize it. You can rename it. But God sees it. Don't lie against the truth. But instead, what we see is that people are self-deceived and deceive others. And this type of self-deception is utilized so that the goal that proceeds from bitter jealousy and selfish ambition can be pursued with a good conscience. A good conscience. At least a conscience that feels good. And by the way, these type of plans ignore God's goodness. They ignore God's good purposes. They ignore heaven's bounty. I remember when this verse was used to help set me free. In 1 Chronicles 29, verses 11 and 12, David said, "Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. Indeed, everything that is in the heavens and the earth belongs to you. Yours is the dominion, O Lord, and you exalt yourself as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all, and in your hand is power and might, and it lies in your hand to make great and to strengthen everyone." Well, the world doesn't see it like that. There was a clergyman named Malthus a couple of centuries ago, and he was like, "Too many people, not enough resources. Too many people, not enough resources." And whole systems of economics come out of that type of a mindset, thinking that nature is limited and that life is competitive and it is a zero-sum game. If you get more that's hurting me, I get less. Well, it isn't necessarily the case. God has an extraordinary amount of bounty, and it lies within his hand to make great and to strengthen everyone. So we'll talk a little bit more about the wisdom that comes from beneath next week. I want us to just review these things. There is a wisdom that comes from beneath. There is a wisdom that comes from above. What we want is wisdom that comes from above. In Proverbs 4, verse 7, it says, "The beginning of wisdom is this, acquire wisdom, and with all your acquiring, get understanding." Get your goals from God. Get wise goals. After all, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord, right? And so, let us orient our gaze to heaven. Let us orient our hearts towards God and say, "Lord, establish the goals that you want me to have in me and give me wisdom both to set the goals and to get where it is you want me to go." And by the way, reject bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. And if all of a sudden you end up coming up with an idea and you say, "Oh my goodness, why is it that I have that going on in me?" and you find out that it's because of bitter jealousy or selfish ambition, reject it, reject the goal, go to God, and get something new, get something fresh, get something from above. God willing, I'll be speaking with you again about wisdom next week.
You have been listening to an episode of Love and War with David Harwood. We hope these biblical, spiritual insights will enhance your relationship with God, yourself, and others. If you were encouraged by what you heard, please recommend Love and War to people you love. Our intention is to share another episode next week. Meanwhile, according to the favor of God, think about what you just heard and apply it. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to write me at loveandwar_dh@yahoo.com.